Chapter 32. Pitt quickly drove to the Pneuma building and closed himself in his office. He assembled his priorities for several moments and dialed Los Angeles on his private phone line. On the fifth ring, a girl answered who couldn't pronounce her R's.
Cascio and Associates Investigators.
I'd like to speak to Mr. Cascio, please.
Who shall I say is calling?
My name is Pitt.
He's with a client. Can you call back?
No, Pitt growled menacingly. I'm calling from Washington, and it's urgent. Suitably intimidated, the receptionist replied,
One moment.
Cascio came on the line almost immediately. Mr. Pitt, good to hear from you. Sorry to interrupt your meeting, said Pitt, but I need a few answers. I'll do my best. What do you know about the crew of the San Marino?
Not much. I ran a make on the officers, but nothing unusual turned up.
They were all professional merchant mariners. The captain, as I recall, had a very respectable record.
No ties to any kind of organized crime?
Nothing that came to light in the computers of the National Crime Information Center.
How about the rest of the crew?
Not much there. Only a few had Maritime Union records.
Nationality? Pitt asked.
Nationality, Cascio repeated, thought a moment, then said, A mixture. A few Greek, a few Americans, several Koreans.
Koreans, Pitt came back, suddenly alert.
There were Koreans on board?
Yeah, that's right. Now that you mention it, as I remember, a group of about 10 signed on just before the San Marino sailed.
Would it be possible to trace the ships and companies they served prior to the San Marino?
You're going back a long time, but the file should be available.
Could you throw in the history of the Pilot Town's crew as well?
Don't see why not.
I'd appreciate it.
What are you after, exactly? Cascio asked.
Should be obvious to you.
A link between the crew and our unknown parent company, is that it?
Close enough.
You're going back before the ship disappeared, said Cascio thoughtfully.
The most practical way to take over a ship is by the crew.
I thought mutiny went out with the bounty.
The modern term is hijacking.
You've got a good hunch going, said Cascio. I'll see what I can do.
Thank you, Mr. Cascio.
We've danced enough to know each other. Call me Sal.
Okay, Sal, and make it Dirk.
I'll do that, Cascio said seriously.
Goodbye.
After he hung up, Pitt leaned back and put his feet on the desk. He felt good, optimistic that a vague instinct was about to pay off. Now he was about to try another long shot, one that was so crazy he almost felt foolish for pursuing it. He copied a number out of the National University Directory and called it.
University of Pennsylvania, Department of Anthropology.
May I speak to Dr. Grace Perth?
Just a sec.
Thank you.
Pitt waited for nearly 2 minutes before a motherly voice said,
Hello?
Dr. Perth?
Speaking.
My name is Dirk Pitt, and I'm with the National Underwater and Marine Agency. Have you got a moment to answer a couple of academic questions for me?
What do you wish to know, Mr. Pitt? Dr. Perth asked sweetly.
Pitt tried to picture her in his mind. His initial image was that of a prim, white-haired lady in a tweed suit. He erased it as a stereotype. If we take a male between the ages of 30 and 40, of medium height and weight, who was a native of Peking, China, and another male of the same description from Seoul, South Korea, how could we tell them apart?
You're not doing a number on me, are you, Mr. Pitt?
Pitt laughed. No, doctor, I'm quite serious, he assured her.
Chinese versus Korean, she muttered while thinking.
By and large, people of Korean ancestry tend to be more classic or extreme mongoloid. Chinese features, on the other hand, lean more generally to Asian. But I wouldn't want to make my living guessing which was which, because the overlap is so great. It would be far simpler to judge them by their clothes or behavior, or the way they cut their hair. In short, their cultural characteristics.
I thought they might have certain facial features that could separate them, such as you find between Chinese and Japanese.
Well, now, here the genetic spread is more obvious. If your Oriental male has a fairly dense beard growth, you'd have a rather strong indication that he's Japanese. But in the case of China and Korea, you're dealing with two racial groups that have intermixed for centuries, so much so that the individual variations would tend to blur out any distinction.
You make it sound hopeless.
Awfully difficult, maybe, but not hopeless, Dr. Perth said. A series of laboratory tests could raise your probability factor.
My interest is strictly from a visual view.
Are your subjects living?
No. Drowning victims.
A pity.
With a living individual, there are little traits of facial expressions that are culturally acquired and can be detected by someone who has had a lot of experience with both races. A pretty good guess may be made on that basis alone.
No such luck.
Perhaps if you could define their facial characteristics to me.
Pitt dreaded the thought, but he closed his eyes and began describing the lifeless heads he'd seen on the Eagle. At first the vision was vague, but soon it focused with clarity, and he found himself dissecting each detail with the callous objectivity of a surgeon narrating a heart transplant into a tape recorder. At one point he suddenly broke off.
"Yes, Mr. Pitt, please go on," said Dr. Perth.
"I just remembered something that escaped me," Pitt said. Two of the bodies did, in fact, have thick facial hair. One had a mustache while another sprouted a goatee.
Interesting.
So they weren't Korean or Chinese?
Not necessarily.
What else could they be but Japanese?
You're leaping before you look, Mr. Pitt, she said, as if lecturing a student. The features you've described to me suggest a heavy tendency toward the classic mongoloid.
But the facial hair?
You must consider history. The Japanese have been invading and marauding Korea since the 16th century. And for 35 years, from 1910 until 1945, Korea was a colony of Japan. So there was a great blending of their particular genetic variations.
Pitt hesitated before he put the next question to Dr. Perth. Then he chose his words carefully.
If you were to stick your neck out and give an opinion on the race of the men I've described, what would you say?
Grace Perth came back with all flags flying.
Looking at it from a percentage factor, I'd say your test group's ancestry was 10% Japanese, 30% Chinese, and 60% Korean.
Sounds like you've constructed the genetic makeup of your average Korean.
You read it any way you wish to see it, Mr. Pitt. I've gone as far as I can go.
Thank you, Dr. Perth, Pitt said, suddenly exultant. Thank you very much.